The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
We need to roll back the state. We spy on all of our own citizens.
Our prisons are flooded with nonviolent drug offenders.
If you want to know who America's next enemy is, look at who we're funding right now. Every single one of these problems are a result of government being way too big.
You're listening to Part of the Problem on the Gas Digital Network. Here's your host, Dave Smith.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of Part of the Problem. I'm Dave Smith. He is Robbie the Fire Bernstein. We are back home after a lovely weekend in Tampa. Big thank you to Sidesplitters Comedy Club and everybody who came out. That was me and Rob's first time doing a weekend run there. I heard nothing but good things about that club, and I know what everyone's talking about now. Real fun time. Great people there. Big thanks to Brian, who owns the place. He was fantastic all weekend. Can't wait to be back there. Great shows. You had fun, Rob.
Dude, I had a good time in Florida. I went out Sunday night in St. Petersburg, just roaming around. There was this great band playing, and it was a cigar
bar. Oh, you stayed.
Bar.
You didn't come home?
Yeah, I partied on Sunday. And
you canceled your flight.
Yeah, I moved it to Monday. I wasn't getting up at 7 in the morning. You're a crazy person. I don't have kids here. What am I doing?
I couldn't find you a better flight time. I should have known if I book you a 7 a.m. flight, you go, Rob's just not getting on this plane. I may never see Rob again if I book you a flight too early. Okay, all right. But oh, you stayed and partied.
You
oh,
can
cool.
listen to rock bands for free and smoke indoors. That's a good... That's
really?
What DeSantis,
you can smoke indoors there?
At least the cigar bar I was at. It was pretty
now
great.
That's a, I think cigar places like have the last out.
Okay.
I think it's like hookah bars and cigar like places are like the last places anywhere where you can actually just smoke inside, which is, it's a weird feeling because it's like a throwback. Like me and you are we're old enough that we remember a time when you could smoke in a bar. We were in the bar illegally at the time, probably, but still. Like when I first started going to bars, even like legally going to bars, was like when I can't remember, maybe it was like fake ID times before I could actually get into a bar. But I remember it was when the policy went into effect in New York. And we were one of the first ones that were like, smoking's illegal here. And a lot of the bars back then were like openly defying the law because they were just like, you know. It's like telling an Irish person you can't have whiskey anymore. Like, they're like, this is our way of life. There's no way. There's no possibility we could change this. But eventually they all bitched out.
I prefer no smoking in bars because I remember the way it would sink into your clothes.
Oh, it sure
but
would.
If I'm ever in a spot now that allows smoking in bars, I'm a smoker again. Instantly.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I understand that. Goddamn, do I understand that. All right, anyway, great time in Tampa. That's cool that you hung out more. We had a whole crew of great people who came out on the Saturday night shows. We had a bunch of people from the Liberty World. Top Lobster was there. Clint Russell was there. Jose Gallison came out. Mark Claire came out. I apologize if I'm missing anybody. But it was a great group. The crowds were packed out all weekend. Just a lot of fun. Speaking of, I have a couple announcements to make. Okay, the big announcement I don't think I've said on this show yet is that I will be filming a new 30-minute stand-up comedy special in July. As last I checked, me and Louis J. Gomez are both recording half hours on the same night. As last I checked, there were a few tickets remaining. These are going to be gone soon. So if you want to be live in the audience in New York City at the Cutting Room while I film the follow-up to Libertas, come on out, gasdigital.com/30. That's where you can get the tickets. And there's also tickets. It's a whole group of great comics who are doing half hours. Just great. Kurt Metzger, Rich Voss, Colm Terrell, which his debut special, which I'm really excited to see. It's going to be a great time. Go grab some of the tickets there if you can. I know the me and Lewis nights are almost out. But if you can't get into those, come to one of the other ones, because there's just they're all great. Everyone who's doing it are really, really strong stand-ups. So come on out to that. June 9th through 11th, I am headlining the comedy Mothership. Friday night is sold out, and the early show Saturday is sold out already. There are still tickets, I believe, for the late show on Saturday and the show on Sunday. Go grab; they're going to sell out real soon, so go grab those if you want to come. I really want as many of my fans to be there. You know, I know it will fill up with Joe Rogan fans, but I want my people in the crowd. So yeah, go move on both of those quickly if you want to come out. And then of course, me and Rob, what is it, in a week or so, we'll be out in Syracuse at the Funny Bone out there. That should be a lot of fun. And then we got a bunch of stuff coming up throughout the rest of the year. We're working. This is not done yet, but we're working on putting a little UK run together for later in the fall. That I'm very excited about the possibility of that, and just a bunch of other stuff. The Legion of Skanks theater tour run is in August. A lot of stuff. ComicDaveSmith.com for everything. Go up there. Rob, what do you got to plug? And then let's get into some stuff.
Yes. Porch tour dates coming soon. I have every Saturday through the end of the summer. So that'll be up on my website, robbythefire.com. If you live in 3-hour ride from one of those locations and you think you got a porch for me, I'll extend Friday, Sunday. So hit me up, robsnewsroom@gmail.com. And then this weekend, I will be at Childerberg, which is one of the funnest gigs I do all year. So if you're out in the Texas area, there's tickets for the Saturday stand-up music show and ceremony to get rid of the World Economic Forum.
Hell yeah. I've never made it out to Childerberg. I'm going to one of these years, but everyone always tells me it's like the most fun thing to do. So that's awesome. Rob is going to really, he's a game changer. Rob is, no matter how big he gets in stand-up, he's always going to just be on a bigger porch. Like it'll be goal. Like an arena sized porch in 5 years, but it'll still be a porch.
I hope so, for the summer. Got to get those porch vibes.
All right. So I wanted to so the first thing I want to hit on the show today is just something that I wanted to talk about. I had tweeted a thing out about it. And I just recently interviewed Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on the show. The episode is going viral. People really seem to like it. I thought it was great. I was very impressed with the guy. The same day that I interviewed him about that, the day before he had recorded this, and it was released on the same day that I interviewed him, and he was on Breaking Points, which is one of the most popular like online news shows. It's Crystal Ball and Cigar and Jetty. They used to be over at The Hill. They left and went like independent. And so he was on with them, and there was this segment toward the end of it that went super, super viral and has been getting from what I saw, Crystal Ball has been taking no end of heat for this. We haven't had it like an in studio episode since this happened, and we did the live episode out in Tampa, but it just didn't seem right to like get into it on the live episode for, you know, it wasn't the right vibe. But I did want to talk about this because I found this to be very interesting and very like just for a lot of different layers of the way this went down, and the reaction to it online really kind of said something about where the people are at. And when I say the people, I mean the type of people who consume content like this show, the people who go to, you know, the internet independent shows for their kind of like news commentary or news coverage, and where this whole new ecosystem, how this works. So one of the things, first off, that's very interesting that RFK is doing, which is clearly a strategy for his campaign. And I think it's a very smart strategy. And I'm sure this is part of the reason why he ended up on my podcast. is that he's, I think his campaign has recognized, and I think this is very savvy, that they've recognized that they are not going to get a fair shake in the corporate regime media. That's not going to happen. We've already seen ABC will censor him and then tell you he said things that are wrong, so we can't let you hear them. Like, if that's not a fair shake, I don't know what else you could call it. Or if that's a fair, whatever, you get what I'm saying. So he's like, I'm going to hit the podcast scene. And there's so many of these podcasts now that have big audiences. He can come on our podcast. I'm going to get you as many people as MSNBC is going to get you, you know, like might as well come here. And so he's hitting all of these podcasts. And what's interesting about it is it's just a different format. It's a different standard. You know, there are, you just can't get away with the same type of bullshit that you can on in the corporate press. And that suits someone like RFK because he actually has a lot to say and he's actually thought about his opinions.
On that note, the episode you did with him was terrific. And it was surprising, even though there's probably policies that I wouldn't agree with him on. He's like an old school politician, or at least what I would imagine, I guess, what my image of what a politician right. should be, and that he seems to actually have a handle on the issues. Like he has something more than a 2-minute talking point
yes.
that the CIA or Donald Trump just talking out of his ass about, well, it's a trade problem. He actually seems to have done his homework and that he's been involved in following these issues for a lifetime and has like at least a, there are definitely policies, probably social policies that we just wouldn't agree with him. But on some crucial issues, he's at least seems like he's an adult in the room who's done some homework and is opposing the deep state.
Yeah, you know, Jeff Dice, when I had him on a couple of weeks ago, he said, I've heard him say this before, but he goes, you know, at this point, the bar is pretty low for politicians. And he goes, the first question I ask myself is, do they hate my guts? Like, you go, that's the number one question I right. ask. Like, does this guy hate my guts? And that really hits home with me because I'm like, there's a lot that eliminates probably like 80% of politicians today. You know what I mean? Like, does this guy personally, does he hate my guts? Okay, if that's the case, then you don't get my support. But what you're saying reminds me of that, where you're like, the bar is just so low that the standard isn't like, hey, look, if I were to really grill him about his policy on guns or the economy or some social policy, I'm sure there's large areas of disagreement between all of us. But it's like the lowest of bars. You're like, okay, this thing you have a strong opinion on, have you read a book on this subject? Have you read more than an article like on this? It was like an entire book, a thing with two covers on it in between, and actually thought about what you read. And like, he's a guy who's like comes to it, like whatever policy he's reading, he's leading with, you feel like he's read 25 books on the subject, which should not be that much to ask for a guy who like, this is the world you specialize in. It's kind of like asking like, someone who wants to be a basketball commentator, have you watched a lot of basketball games before? You'd think this would be the most minimum thing, but actually what you're saying is a comment on the state of politics is that today it's impressive when you find that.
And it would be amazing to see the left get back to being anti-war, not pro just corporate profit, particularly in the, the, you know, medical arena, and not pro censorship. Like yeah, if we can make those corrections for what the left is championing, I mean, that corrects like 50 years of damage.
Yeah, you know, I get this a lot because like I'm in the stand-up comedy world and I'm me, you know, and like who I am on this show. And that's a bit of a unusual thing. There's not too many people, you know what I mean, who are like outspoken, you know, anti-leftists, you know, or libertarians or whatever, anyone that's just outside of the crazy left shit. And I get this has always happened to me. It's happened for years now. But a lot of liberal comedians who like I'm friends with, you know what I mean, who I've known for years, they just as soon as they see me and we sit down, if we like grab a beer or something, like confessions just start coming out of them because they just know I'm like the same. It's like I'm a priest. Like if you hate the current left wing shit, you know, I'm the guy you can talk to who will like, you know, keep the confidentiality. I'm not going to get you in trouble for this. You can open up to me. But so I was talking a few weeks ago to, I'm not going to name him, but he's a very, very good comic who's like a liberal guy. He's always been a liberal guy. And he's kind of just in this world. And literally like the second he sees me, we sit down And he just starts going, man. He goes, ah, dude, I don't even know anymore. Like, I just, maybe I'm a bad liberal, but I just don't think we should support the war in Ukraine. Like, this just seems crazy to me, man. Like, we're against wars, right? Like, you know, and he's like, and then he goes, and I don't know, I guess, like, if you're 18 or over, like, do whatever you want, but stop talking to kids about trans stuff. You know, like, he's just like, starts coming out of it. And it's, there are, I don't know exactly what the percentage are, but they're not all, they haven't all been brainwashed. Like, there are a certain a percentage of them, and I think it's not a small one, who are like, look, man, I don't want to bring a world of problems into my life. But if you ask me how I feel about this, it's like, it's just the most common sense shit. I'm not saying he's great on every issue. He's just like, yeah, I don't know if adults want to be trans, fine, but stop like pushing it on kids. And what? We got to fight a war over Ukraine? I don't even care. Why does that matter? Like, why, you know? And so anyway, there's just a lot. And I think there's something about RFK's campaign that's very interesting. It's like a measuring stick. Like, he's feeling the temperature of the water for all of us, and the fact that he's polling so well, it kind of indicates like there's something here, you know. Like, even amongst Democratic voters, he's polling like 20% in multiple polls, and then there was one amongst just like all voters where he was up in the 30s, I think. And so you're like, okay, there's something here.
The fact that he's not just being pushed into a well, considering what he wrote about Fauci and the climate we were in a year ago,
yeah,
about Fauci being the god and don't question anything. So, like, just the fact that he's able to be in polite society and not be having that reaction, even that's corrective.
I mean, you're so right, dude. And it, just like the way you say it, as you say it there, you know, it's the only thing I could think of is Ron Paul. It's like the only example I could think of that's kind of like that. Now, I'm not saying he's not Ron Paul. Nobody's Ron Paul. I'm not Ron Paul. Like, no, he's definitely not Ron Paul. I'm just saying, to the point you were making, it is like if you heard what George W. Bush was saying in 2006, 2007, and then to see a Republican on stage polling very well, who is saying the complete opposite, literally the exact opposite of what this guy was saying, is very, yeah, for a Democratic, you know what I mean, like, candidate to be saying what literally only a year and a half ago, a certain percentage of Democratic leaders and voters might have supported jailing you for that. Like, they like, I'm not, like, a certain percentage of them, not 1%, probably closer to 15-20%, would have thought like you should have your life ruined in some way for even uttering these thoughts. That's what you're dealing with here. All right, guys, let's take a moment and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Fume. Look, cold turkey might be great on sandwiches, but there's a better way to break your bad habits. We're not talking about some weird mind voodoo from your crazy neighbor or some other insane, you know, thing. Oh, this is going to help. You got to stick pins and needles into your eyebrows or something. We're talking about Fume. They're a longtime sponsor and they've helped a ton of people. Fume is an innovative, award-nominated device that does just that. It helps you break bad habits. Instead of electronics, Fume is completely natural. Instead of vapor, Fume uses flavored air. And instead of harmful chemicals, Fume uses all natural, delicious flavors. You get it. Instead of bad, Fume is good. It's a habit you're free to enjoy, and it makes replacing your bad habits easy. Your Fume comes with an adjustable airflow dial and is designed with movable parts and magnets for fidgeting. Gives your fingers a lot to do, which is helpful for de-stressing and anxiety while breaking the habits. I've used Fume a bunch. I really love it. It's just a great feeling. It's nice and relaxing. I like having something to do. I like that mechanical hand-to-mouth action. It's great for me. I know a lot of people who use it. Stopping is something we all put off because it's hard, but switching to Fume is easy, enjoyable, and even fun. Fume has served over 100,000 customers and has thousands of success stories, and there's no reason that can't be you. Join Fume in accelerating humanity's breakup from destructive habits by picking up the Journey Pack today. Head to tryfume.com. Use the promo code PROBLEM. That'll get you 10% off when you get the Journey Pack today. That's tryfume.com. Remember, Fume is F-U-M, so it's tryfume.com. Use the code PROBLEM to save an additional 10% off your order today. Head to tryfume.com/problem to save an additional 10% off your order today. All right, let's get back into the show. So anyway, let's get into this clip. There's a lot here that goes beyond just the surface level. On the surface level, people will be like, oh, you know, Crystal Ball got owned, or oh, she embarrassed herself. But there's much more to it than that, in my opinion. Let's start playing the clip and try to dissect it a little bit.
So let me ask you about vaccines. This is an area where you and I have significant differences. And, you know, just to level with you on this, like, a lot of what you say, I really respond to. I think you're a very genuine person. But the across the board, whether you want to call it vaccine skepticism or anti-vax advocacy, which has been a central part of what you've been up to for the past number of years. For me personally, it's an issue and it's a real sort of red line. And I know I'm not alone in that, especially running in a Democratic primary. There are going to be other millions of people like me who have similar concerns. So how do you win them over? What's your message to people who think like I do?
Well, but just tell me where you think I got it wrong.
Well, I think you get it wrong when you draw a correlation between the rise of things like autism and the introduction of vaccines, when there isn't hard scientific evidence tying those things together.
How do you know? Let me ask you this. How do you know there's not a hard scientific evidence?
Well, because the one major study that purported to show that was retracted, and the scientist who conducted it was, was
now, what you're doing now,
basically
Crystal,
fraudulently created. Listen, I don't want to get in a debate with you about this because you've spent your life pulling out this study. Let me just tell you, I've listened to hours of interviews with you with an open mind, and I'm not persuaded. Now, maybe I'm wrong. That's possible. I'll hold it out there. People can watch. I thought Megyn Kelly did a phenomenal interview with you.
Let's pause it right here. So you can already see what she's doing. And it's just, this is a very slimy tactic that, again, this is a problem. And part of the reason why I don't know if you saw this, Rob, but when I first checked it, it was like 1,000 upvotes and 20,000 downvotes on this. And if you look through the comments, everyone is just dragging her. This is her show. This is her platform. You know what I mean? And I think so right away that one of the things that jumps out to me that's very interesting is that, look, we've talked about this dynamic before where there'll be people who are trying to cancel Joe Rogan, or there'll be people, you know, at Media Matters or whoever are trying to cancel Tim Pool or something like that, right? We've had some attempts at that leveled against us. One of the things that I think they don't appreciate is that it will do nothing to further your cause to cancel any of these guys, because it doesn't matter. It's almost like they're operating the same way they were operating on the assumption that if Donald Trump just went away, then we go back to normal. But the truth is that the reason Donald Trump is there is because normal's been rejected. Those Trump voters ain't going back to Mitt Romney. That's not happening. And in the same sense, like, Joe Rogan's listeners aren't going back to CNN. No one's listening to me and you. And then if me and you disappear tomorrow, they'll go, well, I guess I'm just an MSNBC guy again, or I'm just a Fox News guy again. That's not happening. The reason we have these audiences is because they crave something different. Either they already craved it, or we spark something in them to see things in a different way. And they are not. So in other words, she's using a corporate press tactic here, but you can't get away with that with these audiences that are looking for something different. And this, look, it has nothing to do with how you even feel about the issue. First off, she misspoke when she said correlation. I'm not dragging her for that. She meant to say causation. There is a correlation. There's no argument about that. But for her to say, hey, look, let's talk about vaccines. And then she did this very, how do I describe this? It's a very female tactic where she starts by saying, I just want it to be known for everyone that I don't agree with the no-no opinion. I just want everyone to know that I agree with you on lots of things, but I don't agree with you on this. And, you know, this is going to turn a whole lot of people off because they also don't agree with you on this. So first off, you're just inserting yourself, saying, I don't like it. Okay. So how about an argument as to why you think it's wrong? You know what I mean? And then saying, oh, by the way, it's also unpopular. It was just like this appeal to popularity. And then he has the perfect response to that. The perfect response for someone of integrity to have. Show me what I'm wrong about. What do you think I get wrong? And then she says the correlation. She means the causation between vaccines and autism. And he goes, okay, well, then here's why I'm not right. She goes, well, there was one scientific paper. He goes, there's been hundreds of scientific papers. And then she immediately starts talking over him and going, I don't want to debate you. This is just, you can't do this in our line of work. If you're going to call someone out for something, you have to have something to offer. And when he goes, well, there's hundreds of studies, and she goes, I don't want to hear about you. I know there's other videos, other things. You've done things. I've watched all your things. I'm not convinced. I'm like, oh, this is just bad, man. Like, you're just not allowed to do that in this field. And this, unfortunately for her, this is going to stay with Crystal Ball for quite a while. It's just, you're not, the people here, this is what's interesting about it, okay? This is where I'm at with this stuff. And I think this I think I'm not alone. I think this represents a lot of people. I think most people, like me, several years ago, if someone had been saying, these vaccines all cause autism or something like that, I'd have been like, that sounds a little kooky and out there for me, you know? After the whole push with the COVID insanity and the COVID vaccine, I'm kind of like, I wouldn't put it past them, you know, to like cover all this up. I'm listening. I don't know. Is there evidence that I haven't like really, you know what I mean? Like been exposed to? All right. And more so than anything, it's just not an issue for me. Like, I don't care that he believes the MMR vaccine causes autism. If anything, I kind of prefer it out of a presidential candidate. You're like, okay, so he's going to be real skeptical of big pharma. Okay, so he's going to believe this whole thing's kind of corrupt. That's good. I like that. What I think we've all become allergic to is this thing where someone's got an argument to make and you say, nope, your argument's dismissed because, quote, the experts won't allow that. I mean, this is only one step better than what ABC did to the guy. It's only one step better. Okay, you didn't edit it out, but you're simply saying he's not allowed to make his argument. I want to introduce this next topic. Like, by the way, hey, Rob, I think you're wrong on the war in Ukraine. And you go, well, I just think, I'm not gonna have the argument with you, but you're wrong about it. You know what I mean? I don't know. Anything else you want to add on this? It's just, it's a really despicable tactic.
Well, it doesn't work in this field because I think the people who are listening to podcasts are actually interested in truth. And so if you're doing that, you're literally signaling to everyone, I'm not interested in finding out the truth here. I'm interested in, hey, I'm going to step in as the moral authority and just go, hey, you sitting right there, you're wrong and you're not allowed to comment because I'm the better person than you are. So I get to make that determination for everybody. And I just want everyone to know that I'm making that determination for everybody. It's kind of bitchy. I mean, I think that's kind of the way I would define it, but you can be bitchy while looking for truth or defending your opinion and people will still accept it. It's when you signal to everyone you're uninterested in information or truth, when people made the decision, hey, I'm not going to listen to mainstream media because I know that they're doing that.
Yep.
I'm going to be over here because at least people are exploring and open to like the way to have that conversation is to go, either I've really done my homework and I want to debate you, or hey, I haven't really had a total opportunity to dig in, but it seems very weird to me that health authorities are all recommending these vaccines and that, from what I understand, vaccines have really bettered mankind. And you seem to be saying that overwhelmingly people shouldn't get them because of autism. Can you explain that to me? And then let the guy talk. And then you can say, cool, I haven't had a chance to do my homework. Thank you for the insight. Or you can debate him and actually do your homework. But just to go, hey, I'm the moral authority and, you know, any other information without me having done your homework, don't talk. Yeah, no one like that. That's a losing proposition for trying to be the alternative of mainstream media with the proposition of, hey, I'll actually give you an honest take and real information.
Yeah, 100%. That's exactly right. Okay, let's keep playing a little bit.
Now, maybe I'm wrong. That's possible. I'll hold it out there. People can watch. I thought Megyn Kelly did a phenomenal interview with you that went through all these claims piece by piece by piece. I really encourage people to watch that whole exchange because we won't be able to do it justice here in the 5 minutes we have left. But there are going to be people like me who aren't persuaded and who see this as an issue. And the fact that it's been such a central part of your advocacy means I can't just sort of put it to the side and say, oh, well, I'll just ignore, you know, this piece that's been really important to you in your life. So you're running in a Democratic primary. You have a lot of people who feel even more strongly than me who think that, you know, Dr. Fauci is a hero and all of these things. How are you going to persuade them? How are you going to reach them? And what is your message to them?
Well, First of all, I'm not leading with, you know, my opinions about vaccines. But what I say to people is, show me where I got it wrong. Show me that where I got my science wrong. I've written books about this. I wrote a book about the link between thimerosal and autism that has, I think, 450 distilled scientific studies that confirm and validate that hypothesis and 1,400 references. And if I got something wrong, show me where it is.
But I think people have shown you where things are wrong, but you don't want to hear it. Is because I've seen, you know, numerous fact checks. Dr. Vinay Prasad, who we, you know, really respect on the COVID vaccine. He went through your interview with All In. He did a fact check. I mean, it's not.
And I did a fact check of Vinay, and you should read that.
I will take a look at it. But I don't think that it's fair to say nobody has ever pointed out anything that's been wrong.
Well, here's what people complain about what I say. Mm. And I'm not leading on this issue, so people can either take it or leave it. But if you want to, you know, what you just said about me, that I'm sort of hard-headed and stubborn and just won't give in, you're wrong about that. If somebody shows me where I'm wrong, I'm going to correct it. And, you know, we have probably the most robust fact-checking operation now in North America. I have 350 PhD scientists and MD physicians on, you know, CHD's advisory board, including until recently, Luc Montagnier won the Nobel Prize for discovering the HIV virus. Chris Portier, who's the head of the National Toxicity Program at NIH, formerly, probably the top toxicologist in America. And if I were saying things that were scientifically unsound, those people would not stay with us. What I would say to you is, show me where I got it wrong. Show me a study that where I got wrong, and I will change my position. You know, science is fluid. It's not an embarrassment to me if there's a new scientific study that I haven't seen that comes out and says I'm wrong. That's what you're supposed to do with science. But what I'm saying to you, nobody has done that. You know, if Vinay Prasad, when he did his piece, if he showed me science that was valid, I would say I would change my position.
If we got the two of you together,
Response to him.
So you say this isn't what you're leading with. But
I just already pause it right there. I just love. And by the way, I like Cigar. Me and him have like messaged several times to try to set up a show. We've never made it happen. We will, I'm sure, at some point, like do a show together. But it's just, you can tell he's uncomfortable with how like unfair she's being in the situation, and he just comes in, he's like, maybe we'll get you guys together, do a little thing. That's all he's come in and said. So maybe we'll just do it. All right, you guys keep going. Anyway, look, what can I say here? It's the same thing again. She goes, well, other people have shown you where you're wrong, and you still don't change. And then he's like, okay, but did you read the counter of what I wrote back to this guy and why I think he is wrong? And she's like, I'll check that out. And it's like, so she's just doing this thing where she's asserting that he's wrong. It's like just the intention of like, we're going to frame this as you're wrong. My next guest is Rob Bernstein, and he's wrong about the economy. Here, Rob, you know, like, all right, we don't want to go back. People have already shown you why you're wrong on this. And it's like, this is just not, it's not an honest way to interview somebody. If you want to call someone out for being wrong about something, then the onus is on you to have done your research and know how to argue this position and not just constantly be saying, oh, you should check out this interview or this scientist already proved you wrong or this, that. Like, how? Just explain it. Again, I am somebody who is truly, I'm agnostic on this issue, right? Meaning like I just don't have a strong opinion on it one way or the other. I don't know. I'm open to arguments. Like I'll confess, I haven't done enough research on this topic, but that's why I would never like have someone on my show and go, you're just wrong about this, because I'm not in a position to do that. I might say something like, you know, a lot of other scientists have said this about you. What's your response? You know, something like that. Or I might say what Cigar said there, which I think is totally reasonable to say, hey, would you be open to having a debate with this other scientist who says you have it wrong? I think that's great. I remember always through the COVID thing, I always wanted that. Always wanted to see like, you know, one of the dissenting scientific voices debate one of the top ones. I would love if Dr. Malone and Fauci debated mRNA vaccines. Now, Fauci would never do it. I have a feeling Dr. Malone would do it in a fucking second. But you know what I'm saying? Like, that's reasonable. This is just, it is like you said, it's bitchy. I don't mean that even just because she's a woman. just mean it's like, I'd say the same thing if a man was acting this way. It's just not, there's a zero integrity to this style of interviewing someone. All right, guys, let's thank our sponsor for today's show, which is ZBiotics pre-alcohol prebiotic. If you've ever missed a workout because of drinks the night before, you're not alone, but now there is something you can do, and that is you can try ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic. It's the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle those rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for your rough next day. ZBiotics produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. It's designed to work like your liver, but in your gut where you need it the most. Just remember to drink ZBiotics before drinking alcohol. Drink responsibly and get a good night's sleep to feel your best tomorrow. You got to check this out. We all know about those rough mornings. This is something that can really help. Give ZBiotics a try for yourself. Go to ZBiotics.com/POTP. That'll get you 15% off your order when you use the code POTP at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember, head over to ZBiotics.com/POTP and use the promo code POTP at checkout for 15% off. And thank you to ZBiotics for sponsoring this episode. Let's get back into the show. Anything you want to add before we jump back in, Rob?
No, let's jump back in.
All right, let's keep playing.
Just have to say, as someone who, you know, is watching your candidacy closely and is aware of the advocacy you've been doing and, you know, the organization that you are involved with, it's hard for me to believe this won't be an important part of how you govern. So I think that's the most important piece for people to get, who you have to accept there are going to be people like me who just don't agree with you on this. You know, certainly understand that there are many who do think that the vaccines that we have are more beneficial than harmful, that, you know, got their kids vaccinated and are happy for that decision. So how is this going to impact the way that you govern, or does it not at all?
I mean, I'm going to govern according to, you know, what evidence-based medicine.
Let me give a specific question. If there's another pandemic, in the last pandemic, former President Trump, something we gave him a lot of credit for, he launched Operation Warp Speed. They had a whole of government approach. They used the mRNA technology that was developed using, you know, U.S. taxpayer dollars to get a vaccine out to the population as quickly as possible. How would your approach have differed?
My approach would have been a science-based approach.
Which means what?
Which means a medicine-based approach, the approach that has been used for, you know, and approved for decades. You look first at therapeutics that are off the shelf, and you look at the efficacy of those. I mean, what I would have done if I was in power then, I would have created an information grid, because now we have this internet that is supposed to benefit us and has become instead an instrument for, you know, totalitarian control. But let's use it for something good. Let's link all 15 million doctors, frontline physicians all over the world, and find out what they're doing to treat this new respiratory virus, and find out what they're saying is working and not working, and then test that with science, and then turn it into instantaneously into protocols and recommendations for other scientists.
So would a vaccine development be part of that?
Well, you know, I don't think the vaccine worked. I think, you know, if you think it worked, then try to explain to me the countries that were unvaccinated did much better than our
many of those countries, because there are a lot of different factors in various countries. So a lot of those countries that you pointed out before,
why do we have the highest death rate in the world by far?
I think there are a lot of factors that may go into that. Yeah. One of them is the fact that we are disproportionately obese as a society. We have the negative health outcomes that you've been talking about. We don't go outside as much as countries, say, in Africa. I mean, there are a lot of different factors that may play into that. But I will say, did the vaccines work in the way they were initially promised to prevent spread? No, I don't think so, especially once you got to later variants. But we have a lot of data that shows that in terms of reducing severe hospitalization and death, the vaccines were really important. And maybe there was a cost-benefit analysis.
I want to see that data. I know that's what the industry says.
There is lots of data, and not just from here, from around the world, that shows the vaccine doses, and not just our vaccines, but ones that were created all around the world, reduce severe hospitalization and death. So in that way, yes, I do very much believe that they will.
Let me tell you something.
This is what I love, is that she gets to this point. First of all, let me just say, when he answers the question, I think that was a spectacular answer. And that he's absolutely right. Like, what would have been the best approach to this? And he's like, look, I mean, and look, even as like an anarchist, I'm like sitting here going like, if the government has some role, then like, yeah, it would be something like, I don't know, creating a database and talking to the 15,000 scientists or whatever number he said, doctors around the country, and talk about what they're using to treat this and what results it's had. Try to put together the best recommendations. He said you start with off-the-counter medications because they're kind of already things that we know about what the side effects are. They're not dangerous new technology. You know what I mean? It's a like completely reasonable answer. You focus on therapeutics instead. And I wonder who was pushing this drive. We demonized every therapeutic, right, that couldn't be like patented by one of these big companies. So this is insane. But when she gets to this point where, like, you know, this is the new thing that they fall back on, that everybody who's like defending the vaccines falls back on. They go, yes, it didn't work like it was originally promised to, because no one can defend the lies that the vaccine was sold off of. And not just sold, but the lies that were being told as they coerced people into taking the vaccine. So no one can defend those. They're like, yeah, it's true. It won't make you not get it. It won't make sure you don't spread it. But millions of lives were saved. Millions of lives were saved. And then his response is, what data do you have to support that claim? And what data did she provide, Rob?
None.
Nothing. Nothing. It's just an assertion. No, what the data she provided was, well, I think we have lots of data from all around the world that shows. Like, okay, we're going to need a little bit better than that, Crystal. Like, not just other people say, or other people have done this, or we know this to be true, or I'm asserting this is to be true. Explain it to me. You tell me what the data is. Where you're making a claim now. I've heard 1,000 claims about this vaccine that have all been proved wrong. Now you're making another claim. The claim is what? That it reduced severe illness and death. Show me the evidence on that. Because all the evidence that I've seen seems to suggest that after a relatively short period of time, you actually have a slightly worse outcome range than you did before you got vaccinated. That actually, if you're going 6-8 months, a year into the future, the unvaccinated are better off than the vaccinated. Now, I know that this was one of the original lies of COVID. I know that they were all, when the vaccine first rolled out, they were like, everybody who's dying is unvaccinated. It's only the unvaccinated. Biden said this over and over again. It's a pandemic of the unvaccinated now. They're the only ones dying of this. But that lie has been completely blown up since then. It's just not true. The way they were collecting that data was completely bullshit. And lots of people have gotten severely sick and died who were vaccinated since then. That is just a fact. So now we're falling back to the claim that, well, they still saved millions of people's lives. Show me your evidence.
Yeah. He should have responded with, yes, I would not have supported medical tyranny and untested vaccines being forced upon a population. And my approach would allow people to keep their jobs and, you know, continue living normal lives. And how would I have done it? Well, instead of a centralized approach that favored a pharmaceutical company and forced everyone to get a vaccine and stay in their house, I would have let you interact with your personal doctor. And I would have then seen the results from the marketplace of what was working best and trying to share that information with other doctors that they could best care for their patients.
Yeah, well, that's a home run answer, Rob. Look, he's great, but he's still a Democrat. He's still a Democrat. He's not a libertarian. You can't expect him to be perfect. But
hit me up, buddy. I'll write for you.
I'll put you guys in touch. That would have been a perfect like knock it out of the park answer. But it's just
no. But I actually love the fact that he's open to, hey, we shouldn't have centralized government because they're not going to do a better job in the market. And if every doctor actually had the freedom to go and treat their patients and the government just stepped in to actually try and maybe accumulate and process that data for everybody, that would have been a better result than the FDA and, you know, CDC and whoever just coming up with protocols.
Yeah, well, I certainly agree with that. But, you know, it's like a lot of times it's like at this point, I think at least with this vaccine, I really do think the onus has to be on the people making these claims. about how great it is at this point, because every claim that is made on behalf of the vaccine has fallen apart very shortly after, or as soon as there is real data that comes out about it. And so I'll just say this, like, look, let's be honest about this. There's a reason why the kind of booster regime rose up very shortly after the original, you know, enforced vaccinations. How about this? Can anyone point to any piece of scientific evidence that says for the majority of the adult population, something like 70% in America got double vaccinated at the very beginning of it? Something like half of them got boosters, and less than that are up to date with their boosters. But for that majority of the adult population, the 70% who got double jabbed in the beginning, are they any better off right now? Show me one piece of scientific evidence that suggests that somebody who got double vaccinated in the summer of 2021 is in any way in a better place being protected for COVID than somebody who didn't get vaccinated. Because you can't, by the way, spoiler alert, none of you are going to be able to. And in fact, there's pretty compelling arguments that they're actually in a worse place. But regardless of that, even if you don't think that's the case, you can't show me any evidence that says they're in a better place. But that is long worn off, and everybody agrees with that. It's basically useless against the current variants. It's just nothing. So you mandated this vaccine that has now, only 2 years later, is worthless to them. How many lives are you claiming this saved? This is a ridiculous claim. What percentage of those people you think would have died from COVID in that time? I don't think so. Is that by a few months later, there were different variants out that they were already admitting you have very little protection against from that vaccine. This is just not true. And the Delta variant didn't completely overtake the original variant because of the vaccine. It did it in vaccinated and unvaccinated countries alike. This is how viruses work. They mutate. You know what I mean? And so this was coming one way or the other. But anyway, these claims that they make are it's just kind of infuriating that after all this time with this COVID jab, they can still just kind of make these claims and not really have to back it up at all. All right, let's keep playing.
Parroting what the public health agencies have been saying, but they do not have a scientific basis for that. And I have another book out that you should look at called Died Suddenly that goes through all the Johns Hopkins data, which is the dashboard data that everybody used, and shows exactly what happened when the first of all, the vaccine, the Case Western study that is probably the largest, most recent, shows that at most the vaccine gives you a very, very small amount of protection, and that after 7 months, you go into negative efficacy. So you are more, if you got vaccinated, you're more likely to get sick, you're more likely to get severe illness, and you're more likely to die than if you were unvaccinated.
I have not seen that. I have seen study after study that shows the opposite. Listen, I don't want to get bogged down in this because I don't think we're going to see eye to eye here. And we have
Seems like you have something that would discredit everything that I was going to say, so I'll just cut it off here, and politely we'll move on to the next talking point that I have that criticizes you.
Imagine saying, he goes, I've seen studies that say the opposite, but I don't want to get bogged down in this. Wow. No, you haven't. Here's the thing. You haven't. What he said was that at best you get a little bit of protection, and after 7 months, there's been studies that indicate that you actually have negative protection, meaning you're actually worse off than you were before that. You have not seen studies that indicate that after 7 months, you have more protection. No, you haven't. That's why even the official narrative is that you're supposed to get boosted. That's even what they're saying, because they can't even pretend that you're like, no, you're good. If that were the case, they'd be saying you don't need to get boosted. But that's not what they're saying, right? Okay. So this is what all the pharmaceutical companies were saying. We're working on developing vaccines for the new variants. This isn't that she just goes, well, yeah, you say that, but I've seen other studies, but I don't want to get bogged down in it. I mean, look, here's the truth about this, right? Even if you disagree with RFK's take here and you agree with Crystal Ball's take here, you'd still have to admit that she's arguing in the most bad faith manner. That is just such bullshit to say, no, I've seen other studies, but I don't want to get bogged down. But I don't want to get bogged down because we've got this time limit that I just made up. It's like, you're not on TV, bitch. There's no fucking commercial that you have to run next. And he ain't going nowhere. He'll sit there and talk with you. I know this because his people told me when he was in the podcast with me, his people told me, they were like, look, we got a time constraint. It was like so-and-so. And then the time was coming up. And then I was like, okay, well, I know you got to get out of here. And then he was like, one more thing about Ukraine. You know, and just wanted to keep talking. I know RFK enough just from the one time meeting him. He would have kept going with her if she wanted to argue this point with him. All right. That's pretty much all we need to see from the video. So I don't know. I just, the thing that I find really interesting about this is I think that it just, number one, I mean, look, the thing is, it was just a very bad look for Crystal Ball. I've given their show credit before. I think their show is good, and they did a really good job covering the like the 2020 presidential primaries back in 2019. I thought they were really on point with a lot of that stuff. I think they've put out some good content. I think that this was really bad for her, and I think this is going to stay with her for a while. Her audience really seems upset about it. I don't know if she's like addressed it since, but this is going to be a tough one for her. I think that where people are right now is that they are very, let's say, skeptical of the entire medical industrial apparatus. I think they are skeptical of big pharma companies. And I think that that makes sense because in the most important moment, the American people were completely lied to. And these people raked in crazy profits off the lies they were telling people. And I think the other thing, as we said before, is that people in this like alternative media internet world are not interested in this style of interview. They want to hear like real conversations. They want to hear a conversation where like this person gets to make their argument and you have to have a counter to that argument. This stuff does not win in this world. And there's something very encouraging about that. There's something very encouraging to me that she got such a negative reaction for using these tactics. This was like from the very beginning, she goes, I think you're wrong. He goes, well, here, I've written books about this. She goes, we got 5 minutes left. I don't want to get bogged down, but all these other people say you're wrong. I'm not buying it. That's just lame, man. That's lame. That's a lame way to argue. And if the claim is so absurd, you know what I mean? If what he's saying is so wrong, then okay, then your job should be easy. Your job is to demonstrate why it's absurd. You can't just say, I don't want to get bogged down in this. I don't want to get bogged down in this. I only have enough time to tell you you're wrong. I don't have enough time to demonstrate it. Sorry. It's a real shame. Anyway, I thought that was worth covering and going over. All right, guys, let's take a moment and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Bambi. With Bambi, get access to your own dedicated HR manager starting at just $99 a month. They're available by phone, email, and real-time chat, so onboarding and terminations run smoothly, team members reach peak performance, and your business stays compliant with changes in HR regulations. And with Bambi's HR autopilot, you'll automate important HR practices like setting policies, training, and feedback. This is a great tool for small businesses who don't want to hire an in-house HR manager that can cost up to $80,000 a year. Bambi starts at $99 a month. Schedule your free conversation today to see how much Bambi can take off your plate. Go to Bambi.com right now and type in part of the problem under podcast. When you sign up, that'll really help this show out. One more time, Bambi.com, Bambee.com, Bambi.com, and type in part of the problem under podcast. All right, let's get back into it. Any other thoughts on that, Rob, or you want to move on to the next story?
Next story.
All right. So the next story we got going on, and this is, we only got time for one more, but I did find this to be interesting. A very interesting piece in the Wall Street Journal was just released. It has been picked up just about everywhere. So evidently, Bill Gates. The story is about Bill Gates and his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. If you might remember, Bill Gates was actually asked on the TV news there about his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. He's one of these people, as many celebrities have been, celebrities and politicians and kind of, you know, businessmen and all types of people have been connected to Jeffrey Epstein in one way or the other. Bill Gates was asked about this back, I don't remember when this was, but it was a while back. And this is what he had to say at the time about his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein.
It was reported that you continued to meet with him over several years. And that, in other words, a number of meetings. What did you do when you found out about his background?
Well, and, you know, I've said I regretted having those dinners. And there's nothing, absolutely nothing new on that.
Is there a lesson for you, for anyone else looking at this?
Well, he's dead. So, you know, in general, you always have to be careful.
It was reported that you continued.
All right. That might go down as the most uncomfortable minute in television history. He's dead. And you can see him kind of crack a smile. He goes, you don't seem so upset about that. All right. Yes.
It's,
so there you go.
Amazing how not smooth some wealthy rich people can be.
Well, you could see already that he was like, bitch, no one told me you were going to ask that question. Right. What?
I'll have you killed too. Yeah.
So anyway, that was Bill Gates being asked about the question. No lesson to be learned. I had a dinner with him. You know, he says, oh, we were trying to get some money from him for a project. I'm very proud of my philanthropy, he says in the longer clip. No, nothing there. So anyway, now it's being reported that Bill Gates had an affair. And the Wall Street Journal is reporting that knowledge of the relationship was used by Jeffrey Epstein in a seemingly threatening email to Gates back in 2017. Not that long ago, kind of shortly before the whole thing blew up. This is interesting for a lot of different reasons. But one of the things that I thought was interesting about this is that this is the first, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but the first real mainstream report that's being circulated by all of the, you know, like established newspapers that is actually indicating that, yes, Jeffrey Epstein was in the business of blackmailing powerful people. This, up until then, had all been kind of in the realm of what would be demonized as conspiracy theories. Something that people like us were talking about was obviously the case, but they never really confirmed this before. But now this is being confirmed that, in fact, yes, Bill Gates had an affair. Jeffrey Epstein got knowledge of it and then was holding it over his head. That's pretty interesting.
To add to the story a little bit, so it's also interesting that this is coming out now and is unsourced. Mm-hmm. So how long have they been sitting on this for? And is it because of other information that it will see the light of day because of the J.P. Morgan case? The actual blackmailing, though, is interesting to me. I'm just looking at like the snapshot of the way that this behavior could work. Think about what an affair could cost Bill Gates. That could cost him $50 billion. I don't know the relationship between him and his wife, but theoretically, if you know that the guy's having an affair, that might seem like that's not enough leverage and that a guy like Epstein would need to have like the leverage of, oh, you with kids? Not necessarily. If he's actually sick enough to go like to track billionaires and go, hey, I've got a piece of information here that's going to cost you $50 billion. And all I want you to do is open up a new charity that I'm a name on. You might go, OK. And now look at what that opens up for Jeffrey Epstein is he gets to parade around Earth going, oh, I got a charitable foundation with Bill Gates. Think about all the doors that then opens for mm-hmm. him for funding, for soliciting other funds, who he actually gets to then give all these funds to. You know what I mean? It's a very interesting pawn piece for Jeffrey Epstein in terms of his world of influence. And then that open, what kind of loans does that then open him up to with J.P. Morgan now that he's brought Bill Gates to them as a client with the fund? You see, it's a very... Yeah. It's like a very interesting maneuver where it's like that one piece of information could have been enough to have the leverage. It's not that big of an ask. And then also the leverage you have on Bill Gates down the line is like worse things come up and you're like, hey, Bill, I need your support on this. And Bill's like, no. And it's like, well, you know, we are charitable partners on this fund. And if I get in trouble for this, that's not going to reflect well on you. Now, all of a sudden, it's like that's what happens 10 years later, right? That's what happens when you're in business with the mob. And then you get the request that you don't want to oblige by, but you're in business with the mob.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. And yeah, you could certainly see how advantageous it would be for Jeffrey Epstein to have Bill Gates in his pocket to some degree, whatever that would mean. But it's also interesting that now the other, you know, like layer of this is that now you have Bill Gates. You just see what a liar he is also, because he's asked about his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. And it's like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. I mean, you know, I regret it. I regret meeting with him. Like, no, you didn't just meet with him, dude. You fucking like you were threatened by
and,
this
and
guy.
And the fact that I guess Epstein, I mean, this is the part of the story that either this is just how good he was at what he was doing, or there's just a part of the story that we don't know about. But apparently he was paying for the girls to live in New York City and her college, which could mean that every single day he's like sending pictures to Gates like, hey, here's that lady type thing. Like he inserts himself into the situation so that Gates can't make it go away that easily, or the whole story, like we're not hearing the real story here.
Yeah. Yeah. Which all are possibilities. Yeah. However, it also does just like, isn't it crazy? And you'll watch kind of like the media reaction to this. Like, again, this is the Wall Street Journal is publishing this piece, and all these other like big outlets are picking it up. Where now that it is confirmed that this is what this guy did, he was blackmailing powerful people. Like, okay, so where is the will to say, we got to get to the bottom of this? We have all of these other powerful people who are connected to him. Who else was he blackmailing? I mean, clearly he's taken all these people to his island. The case that this was a big blackmail operation seems to be through the roof now. Like, where is the desire to find out what was he blackmailing these people with? Like, what dirt did he have on them? What the hell did he have on Bill Clinton on their flights to Thailand? What were they doing over there? You know, why was he hanging out with them so much? Oh, Bill Clinton must have been the easiest person to blackmail. You just take him to one party and you're like, I own you now for the rest of your life. Anyway, very, very interesting stuff. All right, we're going to wrap up on that. It will be interesting to follow this. I wonder if the JP Morgan lawsuit reveals anything else, because maybe they are trying to get ahead of something bigger. And like you said, maybe there's much more to this story than we realize. But that's a devious thing to do, man. Find out someone cheated on their wife, and then you put that chick up and you just write them an email to let them know, oh, here you go, she's right here. Oh, I know, she told me about your affair, by the way. So hey, how about starting a charity with me? Pretty goddamn crazy. All right, don't forget, I am taping this half hour special, gasdigital.com/30, comicdavesmith.com for all my other tickets and dates and everything like that.
I'm going to be there partying. Come party with me, people.
Rob's going to get drunk and heckle. He's going to mess up the whole
time. No, I'm not
going
to heckle, but sometimes it's nice to be able to just watch and not be working. It's the best. Like, I had that when we were in Reno, because usually I'm working, so I got to behave myself. But I was like just walking around, hitting everyone's like little pens and taking drinks from everyone's drinks. And then at some point, I was in the middle of a conversation with someone, and I was like, you know, I got to leave.
That's great. Well, you can have a fun time like that at my taping for sure. All right, and go subscribe over at gasdigital.com. Use the promo code POTP for a 7-day free trial. Check it out. See if you like having access to all the back episodes on demand, the entire archive, and all the shows, all that good stuff.
And on that note, the live shows are a ton of fun, and I say shit that gets edited out every episode because we cannot put it on YouTube. So if you dig the live shows, you're missing some of like the best moments. So absolutely subscribe.
Subscribe. It's also just how you support the show. Go subscribe, gasdigital.com, promo code POTP. All right. Catch you guys next time. Peace.